103. Always on the cutting edge.
Was it the Cape Drive time? Welcome back. 072-238-0712 is the WhatsApp line. There you can comment and criticize. Bahraini opposition groups have rejected a decision by the Gulf state to normalize relations with Israel, calling on the people of the region to resist. The accords struck between Israel and the United Arab Emirates last month and between Israel and Bahrain on Friday is seen as going against its people. Bahrain has become the most recent Arab state to normalize relations with Israel. Last month, interestingly, Bahrain declared its commitment to the creation of a state of Palestine. Online for comment is Palestinian-Canadian lawyer and former spokesperson for the Palestinian Liberation Movement, Diane Buttu. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What do you make of Bahrain joining the queue with the UAE? And I'm pretty sure the Saudis are going to make their announcement in the next month or so.
Well, look, this is not at all going to bring any form of peace. In fact, it's quite the opposite, that this is really, in effect, giving Israel a green light to continue its very brutal military occupation and its denial of freedom. The countries normalize with one another when the countries are normal, but Israel is not a normal country. It's an occupier. It's a dispossessor. It's created the longest refugee crisis. It's held on to the longest occupation. And instead of countries normalizing with Israel, they should be stepping up and doing what was done in your country when there was an apartheid regime in place there, and they should be instituting boycotts and pushing for divestment, pushing for sanctions, rather than normalizing the abnormal.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is strange. Something that I'm struggling with is that they keep on calling these peace deals. Normally, a peace deal is when countries have a conflict between each other. I can't remember Bahrain sending troops to Israel, nor can I remember the UAE doing it. So why are they calling these peace deals?
This is very much the Netanyahu terminology. If you look at what's happening here in the country, Israel's prime minister, Netanyahu, he's now Israel's longest-serving prime minister, and he is coming under a great deal of internal attack because of the fact that he's corrupt. And so in order to try to divert attention from his corruption and from his corruption trial and from his overall lack of leadership and his failure to lead, he is instead trying to call these peace agreements in order to make it seem that he is like other Israeli leaders. In fact, his talking point has been that it took several decades, 27 years, for the first peace agreement to be signed, and all that it has taken is 27 days for two agreements to be signed consecutively. And so this is very much an attempt on his part to try to bolster his support inside the country. Plus, it's also a way for the Trump administration to show that they've done something. Remember, this is an administration that came in and guns blazing against North Korea. Same thing when it came to Iran. Is in a protracted trade war with China. Has become the laughingstock of Europe and of Canada. And instead of having any diplomatic achievement, instead he's had nothing. So using the term and the phraseology peace agreement is a way of also bolstering his credentials to say that he is a person who can actually deliver a peace. And this is why what's been very telling is the fact that both of these agreements, both of these normalization pacts, have been announced by the Trump White House because it's very much to the Trump administration's benefit. And both of these pacts show exactly just how in lockstep Trump and Netanyahu really are.
No, most certainly. But isn't it interesting in the sense that we are looking at the dying breaths of the governments of Trump and Netanyahu? I'm pretty sure Netanyahu's corruption scandals are going to catch up with him. He's got 2 years, and then he has to stand down to Benny Gantz. Trump, it seems, is walking his own plank. That's only why I can understand it.
I'm not so sure about either of those. I hope you're right, but
right.
I'm not so certain. I'm not so certain about those. The polls in the United States are still conflicted, and in Israel, as much as there is a movement to try to get rid of Netanyahu, we also haven't seen that there is any real alternative. In fact, Gantz, who is supposedly Netanyahu's alternative, is a person who was bragging about his own annexation credentials. Here's a person who is welcoming these normalization agreements, even though what it is doing is bolstering, they're both bolstering Netanyahu. So it's not entirely clear to me if elections were to be held tomorrow, that once again Netanyahu won't win. And similarly, when it comes to Trump, the same thing can be said. The bigger problem isn't the individuals of Trump and Netanyahu; it's the ideologies that they carry. And sadly, I think for both of those individuals, their ideologies are going to be carrying for a very, very, very long time. And this is what I'm quite afraid of.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with you 100% that the central question here is, yes, indeed, the ideologies that Trump and Netanyahu carry unapologetically, which is a shame to people of conscience. But I think we'd still have to ask the questions, where is it going to go from here when Trump and Netanyahu do have to step down? Because if you are a president or a prime minister, once you've served the amount of terms you can serve, you do have to move on, whether you've got voters against you, corruption against you, anything else against you.
Yes. So in the case of Israel, they don't have a term limit for the prime minister, and so he can continue to be prime minister, unfortunately, as long as people continue to elect him in. When it comes to Trump, obviously, there's just one more term if he is to win. The what it means, however, for us here in this region is that we are now seeing a very dangerous precedent that is being set. This isn't, and I want to be clear, this isn't just a question of normalizing relations between Israel and the UAE. They've actually turned this into a bit of a love fest. Every single day in the news here, we are hearing of some new Israel-UAE agreement. This exceeds anything that Israel has with European countries. So this isn't just a question of normalization. It's actually full-on, full-blown establishing of relations, everything from trade to education there's reports that a UAE businessman wants to buy one of the Israeli soccer clubs. This is not just a small-scale recognition, but a full-on love fest. And that is the part that is frightening, is that when you look at the region as a whole, and I do look at the region as a whole, rather than them normalizing with the very entity that has led to the lack of self-determination in the Arab world, they should be boycotting and should be pressing others to boycott as well. But instead, we've now seen that this overall strategy of dividing up the Arab world into little statelets, and somehow claiming that each one is acting on their own self-interest, that seems to be the new policy that the Trump administration and others have been talking about. In fact, what was interesting in both of the press releases that came out when they were announcing these normalization agreements is that the word Palestinian was not even mentioned, and instead they're framing it as a new framework for the Middle East.
Yeah, I'm glad you've mentioned that, because you are so right that the word Palestinian just hasn't been anywhere in the vocabulary at all. Could one perhaps ask the question then, is part of the longer term plan now to basically ignore the Palestinians away? That's the only kind of English terminology I can think of right now.
Yes, absolutely. And so I want to put it back in its proper historical light. The Israelis, since the ethnic cleansing of Palestine and the establishment of the State of Israel, 1948, what Israel has attempted to do is to relegate Palestinians to a minority status, rather than into being the indigenous, but into a minority status. And what does that mean? What they're trying to do is they're trying to position Palestinians just as there are, for example, Copts in Egypt, or there are Assyrians in Iraq, or there are Yazidis in Iraq, or there's Alawis in Syria, or Druze in Lebanon, or whatever it is. They're trying to turn us into a small minority group that doesn't have any political rights, that their political claims are not stemming from the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. Instead, what they're trying to do is just to say that somehow this is just a minority with different religious connotations, and it's a religious minority. In other words, you're trying to erase the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. We've seen this happen, and most starkly, with this Trump administration, with the Trump administration doing a number of things. The first thing was by moving when they moved the embassy illegally from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. The other thing that they did at the same time, which didn't get a lot of attention, was they closed down the consulate that's dealing with Palestinians, and instead turned it into a Palestinian affairs unit within the Israeli embassy. They then went after the PLO, closed down that embassy in the United States, and instead just turned once again into this small little minority. Also, when it comes to the occupied Golan Heights that belong to Syria, once again we see that the Trump administration is somehow just turning them into some sort of small minority by recognizing Israel's sovereignty over that area, again, illegal.
And looks like we've lost our line to Diane Buttu, former Palestinian Liberation Movement, talking about the deal between Bahrain and Israel. We're going to call her up again to see whether we can complete our interview. The line just suddenly going down. Maybe somebody monitoring the line got the hell in and just pulled the plug. Who knows? This will get all conspiratorial about this particular one. Don't forget that after the 5:30 bulletin, we will have some fresh weather for you. We'll have some traffic. And, of course, Feroz Sheikh will be in studio, and he's got some interesting sound bites coming up in the show. And he's got a bit of racing, I believe, a bit of cricket, and, of course, we will be talking about football and all the sporting codes that are so popular just to you. We're still trying to get Diane Buttu back online again so we can complete this part of the interview. We are hearing the phone is going ring, ring, ring. Diane Buttu, former Palestine Liberation Movement spokesperson, now a Palestinian-Canadian lawyer, who was explaining to us. Diane, I believe we got you back online again.
Yes, great. Thank you.
Yeah, Gremlin jumped on the line there and cut us off. You were talking about, in a sense, the total marginalization and minimalization of Palestinians. Just one quick question I want to get in. It is denying something that's staring the Israelis in the face, and that the Palestinian Arab population is going to be far greater than the Israeli population. And even within what they call 1948 territories, a bit of a euphemism there, even there, the Palestinians are at least one third of the population, if I'm not mistaken. So demographics is certainly an elephant in the room.
Yes, except that the Israelis take a lot of cues from apartheid South Africa. And as I'm sure you recall, in apartheid South Africa, one of the tools that those who are affiliated with the regime did is that they stopped counting. They tried to pretend somehow that the problem was going to go away, even when they saw in its face that it was a 10-to-1 scenario. And so, too, the Israelis have gone down this path of not counting any longer, or if not counting, the other step that apartheid South Africa did, which is to somehow justify it. And so too, the Israelis have gone down that path. So, you know, now we hear very openly Israeli leaders talking about apartheid. It's not even a bad word here. And so instead for them, it's a question of, well, we have to just deal with it. How do we manage the PR consequences of it?
No, absolutely. Now, this is a question, I don't know whether you've got the answer to it, but you're probably a person who's qualified to answer the question. And the question is, why are the Gulf states, why is the Arab world betraying the Palestinians? Because that's what it is.
I think there's two reasons. One is Iran. I think that they are worried about Iranian influence, and they want to create some type of an alliance with Israel against Iran and with the United States against Iran. That's one part. The second part is that I think that there was a lot of pressure that the Trump administration put on them. And as I was mentioning, this administration has failed when it comes to its overall international relations and diplomacy. And so this is the only thing, this is the weakest link, this is the only thing that they could do to really strong arm these Gulf nations into signing these agreements with Israel. To be clear, you know, a lot of these countries already had some type of relations with Israel. It was all under the table, but now it's all out in the open. And so what Trump is doing is he is hailing this as his diplomatic achievement of his term, when in reality it's a diplomatic failure. I mean, the idea that you normalize relations with a country that perpetrates war crimes is really ridiculous.
Now, Don, this interesting comment you made about the long-term nature of these, I suppose, back-channel relations. Anecdotally, I can remember in 2008 standing on the corniche of one of these countries and being absolutely gobsmacked to hear Hebrew being spoken amongst all the many, many crowds of people on the corniche. That really blew me away. And what you say is so true, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
Don Buttu, former Palestine Liberation Movement spokesperson, Palestinian-Canadian lawyer, and so many other things to boot, talking to us about Bahrain and Israel getting into bed together and a lot of the other implications and issues. Don Buttu, as always, a great pleasure chatting to you.
My pleasure, and thank you. And thank you to all of South Africa and for your continued support for Palestine.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.